Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, as we are every single Monday, 52 weeks of the year for over eight seasons now, halfway through our ninth season.
Is it? I keep thinking it's 10th season.
Are we in our 10th season, or have we done...
Who knows?
No, we're in our ninth season,
ninth season, yeah. We started with September 2013. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. We're the longest running rugby podcast in the world, and the only one that's there for you every single Monday, which is...
Well, some might say definition of mine is doing the same thing every week for nearly 10 years and expecting a different result.
Well, the only result we want is that you get your slice of rugby, and for that we thank you for listening and for supporting us as well by either hitting subscribe, by leaving a five-star review. That's one way, without any effort, you can really help us. And for those people that go above and beyond, we really appreciate you supporting us, patreon.com/eggchasers. And to all the correspondents that we get all the time, at contacteggchasers@gmail.com. How was your rugby weekend? Did you play rugby, JB?
I did not. Talk H had a week off.
Oh, dear.
The second team had a week off. I managed to weasel a game for Obedience, who offered me a game to play tight head prop. I was like, yeah, I'll do that.
You're like a sort of mercenary.
Any game, anywhere.
Have boots, will travel.
Yeah. So I finally found a game, but as I accepted that game, I was also dragged onto wedding duty, so I had to go to a wedding instead. Oh. Which was lovely, by the way. Really enjoyed that.
you seem so happy about going to the wedding.
It's not so much I was not happy about going to the wedding. The wedding was wonderful, obviously. But, you know, there's not many games of rugby I've got left, is there? So I've got to play every single one that I can get my grubby little mitts on.
In the shape that you're in at the moment, are you you're in the best shape of your life?
I'm basically like late-stage Tom May. Honestly.
more like a young Tom Brady, I was thinking.
Perfect. Well, yeah, I mean, 37 would be a young Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Very young.
Speaking of which, let's have
a quick... By the way, Tom Brady this week, involved with Sale FC, apparently made an incredible try-saving tackle to down the Albion, which I'm obviously simultaneously overjoyed about and
devastated.
Mortified about.
I am delighted to hear that Tom Brady's playing.
Yep.
Yeah, fantastic.
And do you know who he was playing with?
Nick Flynn?
No. So there was certain Fergus Melcrone who was playing for Sale.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another big time winger from back in the day.
Okay, hold on.
Big time winger.
Nev Edwards.
What was he playing?
First guess. Wow. Nev Edwards.
Wow.
Killing it.
Yeah. They've got a really decent setup down at FC now. They are looking dangerous, very dangerous.
Well, you know how much we love to support grassroots rugby, community rugby, rugby down the league pyramid, and you hear us talk about that on the podcast. Well, I mentioned something just before Christmas that we've got plans to try and take that to the next level. Well, I can actually reveal those plans now. Well, no, I can't reveal the whole plan. I can reveal the first part of our master plan.
Mm. Oh, please.
So we will be broadcasting a rugby game via our Egg Chasers YouTube channel, and it will be the RAF as they warm up for the inter-services games.
I'm looking forward to the inter-services
against
this year.
National League One side Chinna on Wednesday, the 2nd of February. And there will be, trust me, it will be an all-star cast of rugby faces and voices that you know well at a grassroots club doing a proper broadcast. We're not going to be streaming on a mobile phone. This is going to be proper. And I can't say much. And in fact, at this point, I can't say anything about...
Go on, tell everyone everything.
I can't say the long-term plan, but all I can say is we would love to do more like this at good levels of rugby. So if you think you would like to see midweek games, games at different levels, well, that's all we're asking. This is how you can support us. Make a note in your calendar. I'll remind you next week. Wednesday, February the 2nd, tune into the Egg Chasers live stream, see something really different, really exciting, and get behind us, and together we can push rugby on.
Yeah, there are some really cool fixtures out there, and series of fixtures. Inter-services are very, very cool.
Yeah.
So,
have you ever been anywhere? You don't even have to go into the game. Have you ever been anywhere near Twickenham on an Army Navy match?
I feel
for
that. Yeah.
No, I don't think I have.
It is raucous.
I can imagine.
It would be wild.
Feel that going to the in-service, although I've been invited, I'm a little bit unsure of whether to go or not, because it does feel a little bit like that's their thing.
Yeah, you're almost trespassing.
Yes, exactly. A bit of stolen valour.
Yes.
You do a podcast with a guy who was head of.
Is head of
RAF rugby.
Yeah, Paul Godfrey.
Yeah.
Well, he's also head of Space Command.
That's UK, well, also true.
UK Space Command.
I'm pretty sure I know which one he's prouder of. I don't know which one he enjoys. In fact, he enjoys them both. That's what to say, actually. Maybe that's a toss-up.
God is.
Yes, indeed.
So Wednesday the 2nd of February, I will remind you next week.
Oh!
But join us.
So, talking of weird games, why will no one play the Fire Brigade?
Do they have a team?
Do they have a team?
I've played for
the Fire Brigade.
I played the Met Police for Newbury back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. So no one will play the local Fire Brigade, at least.
Is that because basically
they're always on call?
Nope.
They spend 8 hours a day in the gym, pretty much.
Well, you're getting closer to the reason. Very close to the reason now.
And they... In the Fire Brigade, you have to retire. Is it 20 years service that you can do?
Yeah.
There's like enforced retirement.
They all
there?
Have other jobs.
So they're all younger.
Yeah, well, they are all younger. They're all very fit. And Joel Tompkins has just signed up to become a fireman. Basically on the condition that you have to play rugby. I'm not sure if that last bit is true, but he is playing rugby for the Fire Brigade, as is his brother. Is he Sam? No, the other one.
Yeah.
Is it Logan or something like that?
It might be.
I'm sure there is a Logan Tompkins, but I don't think he's a relation. But yeah, so they've got two Tompkins in the Fire Brigade, and they've got a third ex-rugby pro, and that's just locally. So God knows what they've got nationwide.
Well, I've never seen a Fire Brigade team. I've never heard of one.
I played on a Wednesday afternoon once, because a friend of mine, who wasn't actually my friend at the time, but a friend of mine asked me because they needed players, and I thought, yeah, sure, I'll come along. We played the Police. Filthy, mate. Absolutely filthy.
The Police.
Oh, nobody does more illegal things on a field than the Police. But it's almost like they're not scared of getting caught.
So on this, we're obviously going to talk about the European rugby, the other stories that are bubbling away, a little bit more grassroots local stuff. But actually, let's just start with the England squad, because I know it's a little while ago now, and there have been some developments across the weekend, across the last couple of days. So, Phil, bring us up to speed on top of, and build on top of Eddie's original announcement.
Well, yeah, so on top of the original announcement, the rumour is, I've been looking to see if it's been officially confirmed by England, but the rumour is that Owen Farrell's injury is fairly significant and George Ford is going to be brought into the squad, which actually is interesting because it's not a like-for-like replacement in my head as the squad stacked up.
Yeah.
Because Farrell would be the first choice 12,
mm-hmm.
and Ford is not a 12, and neither is Marcus Smith. So,
However, I guess it is a like-for-like replacement in the sense that it just demonstrates that Orlando Bailey was just an apprentice player, not he is a squad member, but he was there really... If there was an injury, he's not going to suddenly appear on the bench.
I disagree with you wholeheartedly on this. So I think Eddie's shown... If you're an apprentice, he'll say you're an apprentice. And if you're in the wider squad... I mean, this is the wider squad. Isn't it the actual squad now?
It's badged as the training squad.
Right. Okay, so in that case, yeah, you are right. Then he might not feature. But if you're in Eddie's squads, it seems to be he doesn't go back on himself. Like Bevan Rod got
yeah.
Dolly.
Furbank.
Yeah,
the one.
Furbank got thrown in at 10.
So...
Yeah, Dolly's a good example.
If he takes you, he'll use you. I think, yep. you know, everyone is there for a good reason. So we'll see what the wider squad looks like.
On Bailey, sorry.
Yeah, no, go on.
I was going to say that on Orlando Bailey, Eddie Jones actually specifically mentioned this in his press conference, that one thing he likes about Orlando Bailey is his ability to play multiple positions. And actually one of the things that you can see in the squad is he's got a lot of players, not all players, but a lot of players, particularly across the back line, who can play in multiple positions. So Orlando Bailey, he specifically referenced as being able to play 15. You've then got Luke Northmore, and who's come in, and Joe Marchant, who can play centre and wing in the same way that Jack Knoll can say, play centre and wing. Max Malins can play right across the back line. George Furbank has played across the back line for England. Tommy Freeman, he references as wing and fullback. Freddie Stewart, wing and fullback.
I don't, yeah. Wing and fullback can do
Australian,
one. I'm not
quite Australian in yeah. the type of player that Eddie's picking up then.
Yeah, it is. And he specifically references World Cup, where you've got to have a reduced squad, so you need some flexibility within it. And he also, in that same vein, he referenced Ollie Chesham, because he is another one like, well, he references him alongside Courtney Laws, someone who can play lock or six.
Or eight, as he has for Leicester.
Which is the same as other guys he's had in the squad. Like he's had Brad Shields, he's had George Ted Martin. Hill, George Martin. Yeah, all of those boys. So you can see, I think there's guys coming in so he can have a good look at them before, like Ollie Chesham, like those other ones have been in previous, like Orlando Bailey. And if they meet Eddie's standards, which are high standards, you'll see them repeated. If they fall below those high standards, they might not come back in.
So I know I said this before the squad announcement. I didn't expect him to go into the squad.
Yeah,
but I do like Ollie.
You have
Chesham.
Been talking Ollie Chesham.
Yeah,
I do like quite him. A lot lately.
He's massive.
He is
powerful.
Big strong boy.
Yeah, he is a big strong boy.
I mean, what more do you need to know? He's massive and powerful. That's it.
Just before we go on anymore, there's one thing I completely forgot. Listener of the podcast and rugby savant Nick Mullins sends his regards and asked what was the name of the beer that we had in the episode before Christmas, because he found himself thinking, oh, I could do go beer. For a was well, it like a milk
no,
stout
no, no.
or something?
Don't tell him. If he wants to have a beer, he can come up here and have one in the studio with us.
Definitely. I'll get some in specially. I will tag it. I will mention it now, just because it's one of my favourite breweries and they do a very good job. So Overtone, which is a Glasgow-based brewery, any of their hazy IPAs, their Nipahs, their Deepers, or their Teepers, of which my favourite, which I think is out of production at the moment, is called Last Bus to Yoka.
Because you mentioned it, is that
I mentioned it about 3 months ago. After that, it sold out the week. I tried to buy some the week after that. I mentioned
the
podcast.
Put yourself out first,
Phil. I know.
Why don't you do
it's
this?
Like, it's like when you were playing, you put your mask on before
exactly.
the child next to you.
Right, I've got a scheme. Why don't we find a small brewery somewhere which doesn't have much production capacity, buy up all of their stock of a certain thing, mention it in the podcast.
Now you're talking.
And then sell it on the secondary market for, you know, a small uplift.
A massive uplift.
Seven yeah. Brothers is a brewery in Trafford Park in Manchester that I
delicious.
Think we've chatted to before, and they do some good beers.
Oh, their beers are absolutely delicious. But I have a criticism, which is everything seems to taste the same. They're not. I don't mean their beers. I mean, the more mainstream these beers get, the more they taste like actually nice. So well,
that is a
you want a bit of pleasure pain in there.
Yeah, exactly right. So now everything is super palatable, and the more palatable it gets, the more similar it gets. You know, I've got beer tasting bubblegum and now bubble tasting beer. Bubblegum tasting beer. You know, surely something should taste like it should taste.
There is like a known problem of production to scale within craft brewing. So breweries like Cloudwater would be a good example, who they've actually split their production. So Cloudwater, a good Manchester based brewery, they have been very small production for years and years and years. And then they struck a deal with Tesco.
Oh, dear.
But they split their production, so they produce their normal stuff that they sell through their own website and their own tap rooms. And then I think they got BrewDog in to help them upscale for the mass market. Yes.
Nice. Back to the England squad.
Yes.
names that you were disappointed are not involved first. Mm. I'll chip in with one straight away, and this is probably the one I'm most disappointed isn't involved. Adam Radwan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's some good competition on the wings.
There is.
I'm very pleased to see Ollie Hassel-Collins because I think he's a very good winger. Yep. He is a big, strong boy for a winger as well.
You know what I found out recently from I apologise to the person who let me know on email. He does walk his cat.
He walks his cat.
There was an article about him in the Times.
Yeah, he's a bit esoteric.
He walks his cat on a lead.
Fair enough.
By the way, I have a cat and he'd hate that.
But I didn't know this, and this makes me feel dead old. I played rugby with Ollie Hassel-Collins' dad.
Did you?
Nice.
Yeah, his dad.
Oh, is he fly off?
His dad was tight head prop for Newbury. Wow. For Newbury. When they were flying up through the leagues, Neil Collins, quality prop.
Did you mention this? Because of
Neil Collins, but I didn't mention.
Did we mention? Because it's like a winger coming from a prop.
Oh, yes.
Did we mention that? We did talk about.
I think maybe it was on a WhatsApp group.
Yeah, or maybe we spoke about like brothers who are. One's a prop and one's a winger.
One's a winger.
Yeah, like...
like Duane van der Merwe and Akka
van der Merwe. Oh, exactly.
Milkman. What one brother was the milkman's?
Brothers that play different positions, but... Yeah, so like Rob Dupree has got the ball-carrying ability, the hitting ability of his brothers, but the ball-playing ability and kicking of, his brothers.
His brothers.
Yeah.
Just in the body of someone a lot smaller.
Just a tiny... He's not even that much smaller.
No.
Yeah, but there you go. When Ollie Hassel-Collins was probably a kid, maybe a kid on the touchline, watching when I was playing.
Yeah.
Frightening, with Nelly Collins, who was a great prop. And hi to Neil. I'm sure he listens.
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah, that is a good call of Ollie Hassel-Collins. You're right. Radwan, slightly disappointing because he is electric.
Yeah.
And we perhaps don't get to see as much as we'd like when he's playing at Newcastle.
I think possibly it is what you've said. He's going, right, I know what Adam Radwan can do. I want to see Ollie Hassel-Collins for a bit.
Yeah,
and then we might see Radwan pop up again.
Yeah, I do. I like that appointment. I like the Luke Northmore appointment. I think he's very classy.
I did not see that coming.
I hadn't said it. I've been thinking about it because he's scored some nice tries and he's playing well, and he has the ability to. Well, he can play 12, 13 or wing, so he can move around the back line.
I think if you're starting in any Premiership team for any length of time. And you get some success. It's only a matter of time until England call you up, particularly with backs. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy that Northmore's there. I think he's a decent player. I'm delighted that Orlando Bailey's there.
I'm astonished that he's there.
Well, sorry, I'm delighted for him. I'm not delighted as such. I think there should be a moratorium on picking any Bath player, though.
Like just I don't get this.
The fact that you play for Bath should be automatically disqualified.
No.
You don't think it should be?
No.
I wouldn't say automatically, but I think...
You have to be the next...
It's a team game. And therefore, an individual in a poor team can still be having a great performance. George Ford when Leicester were terrible.
Yeah. I mean...
And there's the irony that now Leicester are amazing, George Ford isn't getting picked.
Yes. I think you should be the second coming if you're going to be playing for Bath and also get into England's squad. And if you were that good, maybe they'd win some games.
But you have seen it before where... A player comes into a really, really good team and then they go and sign for a poorer team and they're not nearly the player that they were.
Yeah. I think he's a really good player for the record. I think he's a really, really good player. The irony of the whole Orlando Bailey thing, and this is more a Bath point than an England point, is think about how long Bath have been stifling the opportunities of young lads coming through because they spend so much money trying to find that number one fly half. You know, they did it with Priestland, they've looked at Burns, they've looked at all sorts of options, Cipriani's the latest one, and they just needed to be a little bit patient and give some time to one of their kids, because they've got so many good kids. I mean, some of them aren't kids now.
Yeah, maybe it's a blessing that Andre Pollard said no to them if they made him an offer. Maybe it's a blessing, because here they are.
Completely agree.
They've got the answer.
The future is giving as many academy lads opportunities as you possibly can, and how ironic it is that Bath probably have fixed their fly-off problem, though.
Yeah. And the league as a whole is going to get pushed more and more down that route because you can afford fewer big stars.
Which is quite exciting, actually.
A surprising omission. We've got some of the Saracens players still not being selected.
The
Vunipolas, but it was Sam Underhill.
Yeah, which Eddie references. He might come back in later in the tournament,
yeah.
but he's not quite ready yet.
Yeah.
In the same way that he referenced Manu, who apparently, according to Eddie, has had a little setback in his rehab, but could come in later in the tournament.
We need to just operate under the assumption that there is no Manu Tuilagi, does not exist in an England jersey. You just have to make that assumption, and then it's just a bonus if he ever is available.
Yes.
You can't put your eggs in that basket.
Yeah, it's too risky. But teams have been burnt in the past.
Yes, but they have.
England 2015, Stuart Lancaster. Leicester
for a decade.
For a long period of time.
Sale Sharks to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was doing the presses, I've not been to one for a while now. It's dominated by a Tuilagi chat. Absolutely yeah. dominated. Oh, he's nearly ready. Oh, we can't wait. Oh, he's training well. Oh, he looks great. Yeah, we get it. He always looks great. But well, this is the poison.
The disappointing thing, I think I mentioned it on the pod, but in the autumn, whenever he got injured scoring in the first 10 minutes against the Springboks in the corner, England at that point in time were saying his readings, his recordings, both his weight, skinfold testing, but also his speed, his power and all that were the best they've ever recorded from Manu. So he was in the shape of his life.
So you knew he was going to get injured, because I think there's some truth in the 100%, matter.
100%, you're right.
He is too strong. That the strength of his own muscles tears his muscles off of his bones.
Too finely tuned. That happens to sprinters all the time. You think they've only got to run 100 metres and they're constantly injured.
Yeah.
Because they're just that well.
You've got to be so finely tuned when you are pushing yourself to the limits of performance.
Yeah, yeah. Although there is a certain element of indestructibility about Tongans, Samoans, Fijians after they reach a certain age and they play until 40, whatever it is. You know, who's the prop at Cardiff? Who's only just stepped away.
He was, I think, about 40.
Yeah, and you've got other examples like Henry Tuilagi, who played until he was like a million years old. There's loads of examples.
Well, apparently, I think it's across the Tuilagis as well. It's if they walk into a gym, they put on about half a stone of muscle.
Of pure muscle.
Yeah, I heard that Tuilagi's arms grew by doing bloody battle ropes. No one's ever achieved that in history. Oh. You need to slim him down, get him on the battle ropes.
Wow.
Another one to mention, obviously, we mentioned him last week. Alfie Barbary is in the squad. This is not a drill.
Yes.
This is good.
Exciting.
Isn't it?
England could legitimately field they could even do it for like the last 20 minutes of a game, a back row that would be Barbary, Dombrandt and Simmons.
Yeah.
Which would be, you could have Barbary 6, Simmons 7, Dombrandt 8. That would be so exciting.
Mm. Before you even think about the likes of, you know, Earl, or I know he's not even in the
Ludlam's village. In the squad, Curry's in the squad. Curry, who's, is he 40 caps at 23?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a lot of caps. I tell you what, he played in phases very well today. His running with the ball was phenomenal.
Yeah,
well,
he has developed that. Aaron Young emailed contactedchasers@gmail.com, just made an observation about Alfie Barbary. He said, watching Alfie Barbary made me think of Scott Gibbs when he switched to rugby league and in the 97 Lions. I wonder which players do you think could switch the league from the current crop. Alfie Barbary has got that kind of rugby league.
I could see him playing
square
rugby.
Cuboid,
yeah.
Physique.
Barbary's probably one of the few forwards as well who could switch to sevens. You'd probably have to lose a bit of timber, but think back to 2016 Olympics when Leonu Nakarawa as a lock switched to Olympics and won an Olympic gold medal in sevens. There's not that many forwards. Sam Simmons would be another one who could do it.
Do you not think that with sevens players, it's not power you're looking for necessarily, it's that like long levers getting out of
and being elusive.
I mean, not even that. I mean, like, you've got the top end guys on the wing. Did they actually play wing, or did they play down the middle, like Carlin Isles or whatnot?
Dan Norton.
Yeah, like
Perry
the
Baker.
Absolute top-end speed guys. And then you don't really get the big ball-carrying guys. You get sort of longer range.
Rangy is the word, yeah.
Nakarawa,
rangy back rowers like Nakarawa.
The offloading
like Ollie Chessam, actually.
Yes, Ollie Chessam can do everything.
The offloading is one of the most important things, actually, and how you do it, because some will do it by having longer levers and be able to get through and round, and others will do it just through sheer force. Sheer
Dan
physicality.
Dan Dupree.
Danny Barrett, one of the best sevens players on earth. USA's Danny Barrett.
Yeah.
He's a big barrel of a man.
He is.
Yeah.
So, good that he's included. I'm sort of coming around to the fact he might be as good as people say. I don't like the hype ball, but I think maybe. I don't want to get carried away. I don't want to be disappointed.
Hyperbole.
Yeah.
Hyperbole.
Hyperbole.
Hyperbole. I like that. Speaking of hyperbole, just jump into American football Super Bowl ahead. Tampa Bay Buccaneers did it again.
Bucks.
Today they released another little hype video.
I thought they'd won. I was like, didn't they?
And it was awesome. No, I want to watch that game. So we'll get this pod done in a bit and we can go and watch the Bucks. Isn't it? So I'm a New York Jets fan who haven't won anything in ever. We got to a couple of divisional playoffs with the most boring, turgid American football you've ever seen. So.
What? The Mark Sanchez years?
Mark Sanchez running back with LaDainian Tomlinson and...
Mark Sanchez quarterback?
Yeah, Mark Sanchez quarterback. Nick Mangold. Just playing a running game. It was just ground and pound.
I thought it was awesome. It was beautiful to watch.
Well, anyway, we got to a couple of divisional playoffs, but I actually support Tom Brady at the minute. Just that man.
How can you not?
He's just the perfect human being.
How can
him.
You not love Tom Brady? I don't even follow NFL... particularly, but I love more. But I love Tom Brady.
Yeah, so I'm the same as you.
I love Aaron Rodgers as well, but he's out now.
Yeah, it's a shame that. I'm the same. I don't follow it as much as I used to. I used to be addicted to it, but I really want to watch Brady tonight.
Yeah,
just a victory for dads everywhere.
Yes, 100%. You still got it. I could still do it.
Exactly. oh no, it's not going well though.
What?
I'm not selling it.
Oh.
Did you want it at school?
Yeah. No, it hasn't started yet.
Yeah, it has started.
Just started now.
Yeah, it's not going well. Don't look at your phone. Don't look at it.
I don't want to know. Yeah. It's the first minute.
It's not the first minute. They are
kicked off at 9:30.
They're in the second quarter.
Oh no! Tell me.
It's the end of It's basically the end of the first half. Do you want to know?
Yeah.
Tampa Bay 3, Rams 20.
Oh no!
Yeah. Oh no!
Oh no!
Let's just end the podcast.
They won that Super Bowl the other year. The Pats beat the Cardinals. In exactly the same, they were exactly the same, and they came back.
So the Rams head coach is like 34 or something ridiculous, isn't he?
So 10 years younger than Tom Brady.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, that's I've depressed myself now.
It's over. No. Everything's over. It's all over.
Dads, get out your sports kit. It's over.
Well, actually, on the dads in their sports kit, just put. Oh no, do you know what? Let's crack on with some rugby stories. Let's start with the round of 16 fixtures that we have to look forward to after. This weekend of rugby that we've just seen. Let's get excited about the fixtures before we dissect the games.
It's
bittersweet, Phil. Your proud pride Ulsterman did such good work.
Win four from four, grind out four victories.
Scored a hatful of points.
And
The reward
is home and away against defending European champions Toulouse.
My question is, do you think Ulster could win this? Not this game, the whole competition.
Probably not the whole competition.
No, they'd have to go four games.
Yeah.
I don't see that.
So I always think that with these knockouts, people go, oh, no, we've got a terrible draw, we've got to lose. But presumably you'd be losing to lose at some point anyway.
No, it's five games, isn't it? So two in this
two,
one.
Then quarters, the semi-final. Yeah.
Five games.
I get that, but... It would be nice to make it to a quarter or a semi or a final.
Have you made it to a final for you guys?
Yeah, it'd be nice to make it to a final. But
well, they'd earned the situation where ordinarily, if there wasn't issues with fixtures being cancelled and stuff, would imagine they would have played a team they fancy themselves against.
Yes.
And then they get home country advantage all the way through. If you want one of the top two positions, you get home country advantage. So they would have been... They would have been in well, presumably somewhere in Northern or Southern Ireland. They would have been somewhere.
Well, also, yeah.
But it's an advantage. it's a shame from that point of view that they get to lose. So anyway, going from we got a Paris derby to look forward to.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Stade against Racing, and Stade who had an incredible game against Connacht to get through to the final. Racing obviously have cruised it fairly comfortably. In all their games. The other fix, so we've got another... So there's seven French teams, seven out of eight.
Let's go top of each pool versus bottom of each pool. So we got Racing versus Stade.
Yeah.
What's the other top 1v8?
Is Leicester versus Clermont, which is... It's not a particularly easy fixture for Leicester.
Not particularly easy fixture for Clermont, you mean?
It's not the same Clermont.
Not for either of them.
Clermont aren't as good as they have been.
No
but we saw this weekend that they almost came from 20 points down to beat Ulster, because even though they're not, you're right, they're not the team that they once were in, say, 2014, 15, 16.
With Benders, basically.
Yes, exactly. They've still got enough firepower to trouble anyone in the world. And they really put Ulster under some pressure in those last 10 minutes.
So the second position versus seventh are Ulster to lose and...
Quins against Montpellier. And Montpellier, who they've shown when they get all their stars out and they actually are motivated, they're a big, strong team.
They really can be
dangerous, and they've got pace as well.
The third v. sixth.
La Rochelle against Bordeaux.
And, Michelle Bordeaux, okay.
And Munster versus Exeter. So Exeter being sixth place, Munster being
third Munster
place.
Today, I know Wasps were under strength. I don't count that as an excuse, actually. Munster were very, very good.
Munster were.
Very good.
They played really well
and
today.
It's a weird one with Munster, because I don't follow the URC. Should Munster be in Europe, if they're against an English team, I'll watch it. Otherwise, I'm probably not going to do that. And... my understanding of how Munster play is it's muscular, it's boring, it's very South African. I didn't see much of that today. I thought they were brilliant. They were good at the tight stuff. They were good at the defensive stuff. But the way they attacked was bloody brilliant. I loved it.
Yeah, the offloading game was great.
Yeah.
They were hitting holes.
Did you see how they defended the Wasps driving more? They sort of set around the more like it's a scrum, and they engage on it so low. And Wasps, you can see Elliot Stook in the middle of the Wasps pack, rocking this maul, trying to get them forward in pretty much perfect shape. And they've got all of these Munstermen kind of, it's hard to explain, like almost scrummaging height. And they can't move them. Absolutely rock solid.
Yeah, they're well drilled.
Yeah.
That's something that Bath have got to look forward to next year.
I hope so. I mean, if Bath can have a bit of that, you're looking at serious contenders.
Exeter. That's a seriously tough game. Didn't they have? They played in the pool stages a couple of times a few years back. There was one that was a draw at Sandy Park.
Yeah,
and then Munster narrowly won at their place. I think I see it going the same way. Munster edging it out.
Ooh, I don't know.
Home crowd now, because their stadium will be able to be full again.
Yeah, that'll make a big difference.
Big difference.
That's a great fixture, because there's two teams that match up well.
If I could pick a game to work on, it would be. Exeter Munster.
Yes.
It's a good fixture.
And so I'm right in saying that the higher of the seeds will get the home leg second.
I think that is correct. Yeah.
So fourth v fifth then.
Fourth v fifth. Fourth in Pool A is Leinster, who play Connacht. Just go across, head west to play Connacht.
Okay. Oh, nice.
And fifth in Pool A was Sale, who play fourth Bristol, which is.
That's two legs. Sale have got that nailed down, I would say.
It's one of the best fixtures Sale could have got, actually.
100%. Yeah. I like the chances very much.
Sale's chances there. Also,
Bristol will be happy as well.
Bristol will be happy. Bristol prefer that to going to Clermont, La Rochelle, Toulouse, Leinster.
Yeah. Two games against Sale, though. I mean, that's a tough ask. Well, I don't know, actually. Sale, we'll talk about them in a minute. They weren't what I was hoping for today.
So they're the fixtures we've got to look forward to, which are going to be in April?
Yeah, so I think it's consecutive weekends, the 9th, 10th, 11th, and then the following, whatever it is, 16th, 17th, 18th. And then because there's obviously five rounds to take place between the 9th of April and I think it's the 28th of May. So you've got five rounds in a two-month period. So it's... Basically, pretty much every other week during April and May, you've got those two last 16, round of 16, then quarters with a week break, then semis with a week break, then the final, 20th of May.
Yeah.
That's quite exciting.
It is quite exciting. I mean, I'm really struggling with the European Cup this year. We highlighted some
This is what I was going to ask next, actually, because we're very excited about the round of 16. The manner in which we got there...
God, it's bad.
I mean, I'm working on it, and I am very excited, and I'm heavily invested, and I can see and I can sympathise with people who feel as you do, JB.
I thought it was terrible. I just, I mean, today's games, the Montpellier game was excellent. I thought the Montpellier-Exeter game was really excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But even by then, you're so worn down. The Ospreys-Sale game was dreadful. Absolutely dreadful.
You picked the wrong game to watch there.
Yeah, I did.
Because
well,
there was,
you know,
Connacht Stad on the other on the other side.
Yeah, I knew one of you'd be watching Connacht Stad.
well, I only watched that because I knew you'd be watching Sale.
Yeah. So, yeah, and also, yeah, I like to watch the lads. I like to watch lads who I know who's playing. You know, that's mm-hmm. why I watch the English teams. And then Wasps were just completely outgunned against Munster later.
Yeah, Munster Wasps never really looked like they were going to do anything in that game, did they?
No. There was a stage where if Wasps had got over the Munster line to score their second try, it'd have been three
just before half time.
Yeah,
where Coombs was in the bin.
Yeah, you can kind of see Wasps would get a little head of steam. Maybe they could do something because they are dangerous when they need to be, but. Today. They were manhandled.
The timing was right, and I agree, had they have done it, but they actually never really threatened in that 10-minute period where Coombs
were
either side of half-time.
The Munster defence on the line was magnificent.
Yeah.
It was genuinely magnificent.
Munster played really, really well.
Here is a bizarre tweet. An Irish journalist tweeted today that, why do people say, or something along the lines of people... Isn't it weird that people say the Premiership is so physical and yet two Premiership teams have picked up injuries against Irish teams? Does that make any sense to you? Yeah. So, if the Premiership's so physical, why have two Premiership teams picked up injuries against Irish teams?
Being Wasps and
Bath. Not even worthy of discussion. So,
I mean, the guy's got 17,000 Twitter followers and usually tweets fairly sensible stuff. I thought, what a weird tweet. I mean, that is a... It's a bizarre tweet, isn't it?
That's a strange correlation causation conclusion to find.
I assume by that he must think that England training is more physical than the Premiership because Owen Farrell hurt his leg. I mean, that's the only conclusion I can come to. But I thought, what a bizarre tweet.
Yeah. Anyway.
I think we had a giant hole, unfortunately, in the Saturday afternoon offering. There was no 3 o'clock kickoff because the game I was going to be working on, Leicester v Bordeaux, didn't happen. And we had Toulouse's game get called off. We had the management of Toulouse or the someone from the French rugby top 14 league or the organisation that represents the French clubs kicking off a little bit in the same way that Leinster did when they had the same situation. We can field 23 players. EPCR decided it wasn't safe to do so.
How is Cardiff safe, but Toulouse on? So Cardiff fielded.
Oh yeah, when they were all in quarantine, all their players.
Well, this is why, if you remember back in round one or round two, I can't remember.
Yeah, where Leinster.
Yeah, Leinster had exactly. So Leinster had a large number of cases within their squad, but said we can still field 23 players. We'd like to play the game.
Yeah.
No, you're not allowed to, and we're awarding a 28-0 victory to your opponents. But and on that same weekend, Cardiff didn't have their players stuck in quarantine. Not the positive cases, but stuck in quarantine.
Yeah, yeah.
And they fielded guys from Aberavon.
So
and,
is it the case that they weren't allowed it because of the wider COVID risk in the squad?
They decided that it was too big of a risk.
But EPRC, it wasn't Toulouse who made that call. It was EPRC, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because
EPRC, one of those, anyway.
Yeah. ERPC,
EPCL.
But I've read something that said that Toulouse have got a French minister for sport to write to EPRC.
I mean, they made a rod for their backs, haven't they? If you go to Premiership games now, I don't know, are the European games still COVID nuts, like red zones and whatnot?
Yes, the players are in red zones, and you have to jump through hoops to get red zone accreditation. And even then, you are kept at a distance.
They've lost the plot, haven't they? They've lost the plot. They just have.
I mean, that'll upset some people.
Does it upset you? No,
I understand. No, I think it's optics over logic.
100% is optics. There's no debate on that. It's just optics, and it sucks the joy out of games for anyone attending them. So
well, you don't know as soon as you walk in the stadium. If you're from a fan's perspective, you don't know.
Yeah, from
a
fan's perspective,
in England, you don't know anything's going on, which is great because the atmosphere on Friday night at Quinn's was electric.
Mm.
Yeah, yes, it was. That was probably the best game of the weekend for me.
That was very good. So I just want to come back to the point, because you made a point that you've not enjoyed this, and I think there's good and bad that we can take from this weekend. Obviously, the bad, having so many fixtures cancelled is bad.
Yeah,
and some of the dead rubbers is always going to be like the Sale Ospreys game and the the Leinster Bath game.
Some of the games were dead, those two you point to are fair, but some of those games were only dead rubbers because of the cancellations.
Partly because of the cancellations.
Because Sale knew that they'd qualified by virtue of the games that had been cancelled, whereas they would have still had something to do to get it, to guarantee their place.
Yeah, and
for example,
you're always in any competition where you've got league and then going to knockout. You will always have dead rubber games. You can't really avoid there being some dead rubber games because some teams just won't be in competition for anything towards the end of it.
But actually, when you looked ahead of this weekend before the cancellations, there were so few of those. There were hardly any.
It's a
rarity.
You're right. And that's maybe good and bad thing. But if two-thirds of each pool qualify, then... Yeah, by definition, kind of everyone's in contention.
Yeah,
still,
I suppose that's
true. It's only the highest of standards. That's the other thing.
You set the bar so low that if 11 out of 12 teams qualified to the next stage, then everyone's in contention.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had my way, this would not be the format.
Yes.
This format has to be thrown in the bin as soon as possible.
The point I would like to make is there were some awesome games. Like the Quinscast game was great. The Montpellier Exeter game was great. The Stade Francais Connacht game was bonkers and brilliant. The Ulster game was terrifying. The last 10 minutes of that was so painful to watch from an Ulster perspective, because it looked like we were going to throw it away from being in total control of the game. So there were some... I guess my point is, there are always going to be some poor games. There were actually some brilliant games as well this weekend.
I think it's a multifactorial thing, isn't it? It's the fact that the format doesn't really make much sense, so you're trying to work
that's the hard bit.
If Sale beat Ospreys, does that impact Ospreys directly, or is that some knock on to who is affected by what? You've got to really invest yourself in the table system, the format, to actually work out what's going on. That'd be the first one. The second one is to do the Welsh teams, because as I understand it, haven't all the Welsh lads gone on holiday now to Wales for...
They're all in Wales camp for 8+ weeks.
So Ospreys came with basically nothing. Basically nothing.
Well, yeah, it's after this, because Scarlett still had, Liam Williams was...
They still had a chance to qualify.
Yeah, true. I guess that's the... So the Welsh players weren't locked away for this game.
It feels like they've already switched off, that's what I would say.
Well, Wales, the three teams, Ospreys, Scarlets, Cardiff, they got one win between them, which was Cardiff's 28-0 walkover over Toulouse.
Now there's
other things at play there, because obviously the quarantine for Cardiff and Scarlets previously. But yeah, that it's not a great...
Well, look at
it's
what
not,
did.
Not great.
Bristol are not lighting up the Premiership, and they get battered.
That was interesting, because it was only
in the second half. Or
it
last,
was the last,
that,
last
20.
It was the last 20. It was 21 all with 20 minutes to go.
Interesting seeing Johan Lloyd at 12.
At 12.
I just think Bristol thought they could do whatever they wanted, and they were right. That's what I think. The reason I'm a bit negative on it is there's games like Bath as well, who have suffered another historic defeat.
Yeah, yeah.
Another historic defeat.
A historic season of historic defeats.
Isn't it incredible that just carries on going?
Neil Hatley's, a quote from Neil Hatley, we cannot go any lower.
They thought that like 2 months ago.
Let's see, shall we?
Yeah.
In that regard, they are high achievers. Yeah, madness. Absolutely mad. They must have the most miserable time there. I mean, no one must be enjoying this.
Let's talk about some positive stuff for a second. just one thing, actually. You just reminded me. David Wells emailed contact.deadchasers@gmail.com, and he said he points out he had a fiver on Cass to win at 23-1.
Wow.
We could talk about the final decision there then in a bit. But he says the question though, guys. I've been listening for years, but I still don't know why it's quote beloved Hurricanes and quote beloved Benetton and quote beloved Ulster. I'm never sure if it's a joke or not, and if not a joke, why are they beloved to JB and Phil? Can you enlighten me, please? Well, there's a whole back catalogue of episodes where you could catch up, but actually, I'll give you the shortcut. So, beloved Benetton, JB?
Massive, huge Benetton supporter.
It was because you interviewed Dean Budd.
That's right.
It
was. Yeah. Good lad.
Yeah. So, interviewed Dean Budd, got sent a jersey by Dean Budd.
No, from a guy in the actual URC, one of the administrators.
Oh, really? It's quite a nice jersey, that as well.
It's
up in the rugby dungeon. Looking at it now,
yeah, I do quite like Kappa. It's old school brand,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite an erotic, not erotic, but it's quite a suggestive logo as well, isn't it?
Mm. Very much so.
I'm sure that there used to be two ladies on Kappa.
Yeah, but also someone pointed this out to me. It looks like two women back to back, but it also looks like something else.
Yeah, if you cover the top half of it.
That's JB's beloved Benetton, and this was at the time when you were trying to take a massive interest in the top 14 and Italian rugby.
Really tried.
Phil's beloved beloved Canes.
I just quite like Hurricanes. The season when I think it might be the season before they won it or when they won it with Bowden Barrett, and they had I think it was the season with Surveyor on the wing, Jason Woodward playing, Corey Jean, and the All Blacks, Marnonu and Conrad Smith in the centres.
Yeah, that's right.
And TJ Perenara. So it's like an all-international lineup, and they just played amazing rugby. Yeah. And I got really into Super Rugby. I can't remember why, but I was watching quite a lot of Super Rugby at the time and just decided to start supporting them.
Because you didn't have kids at the time, and Saturday morning you could just laze around having a bacon sandwich watching rugby.
Exactly.
Yeah, rugby was awesome.
And I won a shirt through, I think it was Statbacker, if you remember that, game that we had a few links to.
Top on 50.
We had a few links to back in the day. Got myself a Hurricane shirt.
And the beloved Ulster is because, and if you haven't listened to the podcast for 9 seasons, you might not be aware, but when we started, Phil was either very newly retired or was actually still...
I was still playing,
he was
yeah.
still playing.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And still playing technically, semi-professionally, although you were injured quite a lot, for Sedgley Park. So when Phil retired, we realised, well, he's man and boy. He played mini rugby Sedgley Tigers through to first team Sedgley Tigers in Championship National 1, and didn't have a team that he supported. So listeners of the podcast who were fans of clubs from across the world made a pitch to Phil as to why he should adopt their club, and Ulster did the best work.
We did it as like a head-to-head week on week. So two read out every week. It went on for about 10 or 12 weeks. Mm. Two read out every week.
Really thinking hard about it.
I took it incredibly seriously. And I'm still an Ulster fan to this day. So my decision was right.
Final, yeah.
Well, yeah, my decision was final and meaningful. Unfortunately, though, it's meant some ups and downs, some turmoil. The life of an Ulster supporter is not an easy one.
But how good is it going to feel when the glory days do arrive?
When we win the European Champions Cup after beating Toulouse this year. Yeah, yes.
Exactly.
Again.
So that's an answer to that one. Thank you for your question, David.
Mm.
I will jump back to the Quins game and to what David said about he lost a 23-1 bet on Cast. I will segue there by saying that earlier today I refereed under 14s game between Broughton Park, Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park, and Bolton. A very hard fought game. It was fantastic. I've got to say, the lads on the field, we've talked before about. Since rugby started again, I noticed there was a bit more chopsing going on. The lads on the field, absolutely outstanding. They were fantastic, respectful. When they didn't disagree, they spoke to the captain, came over and had a chat. It was wonderful. And I don't really want to... No, I thought hard, do I mention this or not? But one thing I have noticed, coaches.
Do you think there's an element due with risk? The more risk that you eliminate, the more the remaining risk is unacceptable. I do feel it's a little bit like this, particularly coaches, because, I mean, maybe it's just coaching Twitter that is so pious, but, you know, the amount of effort the coaches go through at minis and juniors, mind you, they are a serious bunch of
this was basically the issue, is they were vocally voicing, like basically commentating on every decision I made. Now, we'll get onto this in a minute, every referee will see things differently to someone else and stuff. I just think if you make that decision to say I'm going to coach a rugby team, you are an example, particularly at lads at that age, and you have to take that incredibly serious. I think parents is one thing, and that tends to police itself. But if you're in the position of a coach, I think you're, and we, you know, some people don't like the chat about quote unquote rugby values and stuff, but like that is something you need to take especially seriously. And I was incredibly impressed with the players on the field. Incredibly disappointed by the coaches, and I know you had a pop at Bolton Rugby Club, and it came back to bite you, didn't it?
Did I? In
a league match?
What was that
was Oldham.
Sorry, Oldham.
That was Oldham.
Seasons play on our 4G.
Yeah, I loved that game. Yeah, I loved being on the sidelines watching that game and listening to the Oldham fans and players. Yeah.
Stick that on your podcast. Brilliant. Yeah, but at one point, and I didn't say anything. They sort of. Suggested I. What does he even know about rugby anyway? So maybe
that's a great question.
Maybe word of this will find its way to them. And all I would say is there is over eight seasons.
I couldn't abide that.
Eight seasons of podcasts to go and see if I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And over five seasons of interviews with players, DORs, and when I'm paid to
you sound very much like me when Premiership head of comms Paul Morgan asked me, what have you done for rugby recently? And I nearly exploded. What do you mean? It's not my job. I'm not head of comms. That's not my job. But as you asked, Paul, you know,
there's hours of material.
What do you mean you don't know?
Hundreds of hours of material.
I coach a team, Paul. I coach a team.
Apparently, what they didn't like was the short length of my knock-on advantage, which I said to the players beforehand, there'll be a big difference between the advantages. Just want to let you know how I'm going to ref this. If it's knock-on and you have an opportunity to play and you make a bit of time, or you choose to kick the ball away, advantage will be over. And then when I did it in the game, the players were fine. Coaches were not.
I'd love to see what you would think of my... Well, not you personally...
Can you tell? I've just sort of I swallowed it at the time, smiled, killed with kindness. And
but
then,
I've got a platform. Yeah. So
I feel like
you're
getting a weight lifted off your shoulders here, Tim.
I think it was going back to that point. It was just that. It's like you've chosen to be a coach. You're a role model. And you can't behave like that.
Throw it on your whistle like I did, and like I would have done, and tell them that you're literally one of the world's foremost experts on rugby. That's what I would have done. Actually, anyway.
But now let's move on to Mike Adamson. At Harlequins.
Well, hang on. Before you do that, I want to talk about some coaching. Right?
Oh, yeah, go on.
I'd love to know what we would think of my old coach when I started playing at Colwyn Bay at under-14s. Now, still to this day, when I think back about it, about this guy, I've still idolised the guy. I think he's still absolutely outstanding. And even now, I think, oh, Dave definitely knew his stuff. Of course, Dave didn't have a clue about anything. And I'd love to see what we think about him now, because he's standing on the sidelines shouting at our players continuously, that's gay, that's shit, that's gay shit.
That
was literally...
It was a different time, clearly.
And the reason I say that, and I'm not being flippant, the reason I say it in that way is because that was our impression of him. Like, that would be our actual impression of him when he wasn't there. We would shout at each other, criticising him. But we all absolutely idolised him. I wonder how that would go down now.
Not well.
That wouldn't go down well now. Glad to say.
Yes, absolutely.
We had a guy who got knocked out. Called Sponge, got back on his feet, carried on playing. Like, just the things that went on back in the day.
But you are right in what you say, that it's... with lads, and girls and young women and young men... A very impressionable age, and that for a lot of people, that rugby coach is a massively important person in their life. My brother, if you said to him now, who's had the most influence, maybe, I mean, arguably on his life, let alone, but certainly his rugby career, he'd say straight away Stefan Čerpak, who was his school rugby coach. He happened to be involved in the England youth setup, but in a heartbeat, that's what they say, and so many guys will say that. So it's a really privileged position to take.
Yeah, I just would say, looking back at it, but in today's standards, completely unacceptable. But back then, like, he had a whole team. I think if you asked any of the lads who played in the room, like, what a legend. Still to this day. I'll tell you one more story about grassroots coaches from Colton Bakers.
Yeah, go on.
But actually, I've got two. Both are brilliant. One of the coaches...
Are they slightly bigoted?
They're more horrific. One coach literally threw me out of a moving bus window.
What? Right?
Yeah, a moving bus window. So he's a big old boy. He must be like 20 stone, big South Wellington prop. And we're messing around in the back. This is maybe youth team, so like under 19s. And he sat on me. And he sat on me against the window of the bus. And the bus window popped open.
Like one of the fire escape windows.
Yeah, smashed on the floor.
Oh, my God.
He turns around, grabs me, and pulls me back into the bus before I hit the road.
What?
So
that
wow.
That could have been quite nasty.
Oh, my God.
The other one, this is actually a bit more...
That's incredibly impressive, if
incredibly
scary.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think we got lucky because maybe it fell and smashed on the road, but it might have kind of... given way slightly enough to sort of
to get
then
your balance.
We turn around, maybe that's when it. I don't know. But the point is, I'm not dead on the road. That's a positive. The other one, right? There was a tennis tournament. Now you know how much I love to play rugby, and I used to love the shorter versions, either the sevens or tens. And it was
untouch.
So I think as a 15-year-old, me and this other lad, we got banned. We didn't actually get banned, but. Yeah, we were told sort of you shouldn't play. It was a disciplinary in the works because we had a few cans of beer on a sevens tournament and I was linked to the guy drinking beer, or maybe I was drinking a beer, I can't remember. But anyway, this was frowned upon. So there was a tens tournament the next week and I really wanted to play as tens. So I started trying to arrange a team. As a 15-year-old, I started trying to arrange a team. So I got a load of lads from my old school to play, St. David's College, phoned the tournament organisers, like, I've got 10 lads. We can come and play. I've not thought about kit, not thought about anything, but I've now got this team to go in. And they said, well, we don't think you can do it because you're not in a team kit. You need a club badge. So I went, right, phone Colton Bay. So phone Colton Bay. It's like, oh, there's no coaches. So I started phoning all the coaches, like higher up the levels.
I love even at that age, yeah. JB was just like
desperate to play
and... happy to network all day to make it happen.
Well, I found a coach, right? So this coach did the age group above us. And goes, yeah, sure, I'll come down with you. So we got the jerseys ready. We got everything ready. We're about to go. Friday night, received a phone call. Yeah, we're not going to go because you're banned. It's like, oh, I'm banned. Yeah, because of the drinking thing. We need to have a disciplinary in the club next week. So the whole thing gets cancelled.
Oh.
I heard to Llandudno. And I bumped into this coach. And... he looks at me and goes, you ever do that to me again, I'll knock off your head. Okay then, well, I guess we won't be doing that again. The same coach actually got into a fight with a kid in my school because he was, again, a bus driver. He took the bus to St. David's College Disco or whatever it is. Got into a fight with a kid. So, yeah.
Wow.
Like the Wild West.
It is. North Wales rugby, mate. It is wild. Wild.
Mike Adamson. Having had an experience as a referee today where you give what you see and you make a decision and you're always going to disappoint someone, Mike Adamson at the end of Quinns v Cast.
Well,
with a Dom Brandt.
Alex Dom Brandt's hat-trick try.
We've had a very similar situation to this, right? Do you remember a few weeks ago, Exeter, and they played through a forward pass and then they conceded a penalty? Do you remember that?
I remember Maybe. Was it Exeter or was it Bristol?
One of the two. But this is my thing, which is, it's one thing, you've got to be quite careful as a referee, I think, playing on after a forward pass. And then if the team subsequently gives away a penalty, is that fair? Particularly if that team has been stressed into that penalty giving away situation because of the forward pass.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you're jumping back from the actual try, but within the passage of play. There was a forward pass, or what looked like a forward pass.
Yeah.
It wasn't given forward, so it wasn't forward, but it looked like...
Yeah, it could have been if it had been reviewed.
Back in the old days in Broughton Park, because this is how they did business, when they played touch, if the ball went forward and one of the teams didn't agree with it, or we thought we should turn the ball over, do you remember this? Everyone saying, hands on heads! So we'd, you know, so if I think that you've done the wrong thing and you've not given us the ball, right, hands on heads. So we all put our hands on our heads and then we refuse to play. Right, so until you give us the ball, right? Because that's just how things were done at Broughton Park.
Wow.
Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park.
Yeah.
Yes.
Harlequins, though, the other team who aren't Harlequins, cast, would genuinely have been better when that forward pass went forward, put their hands on their heads, and let Harlequins score a try, because it would have been reviewed and it would have been turned over, because they all knew it was forward. Instead, they give away a penalty, and that then leads to whatever that leads to.
Yeah, you can't review a forward pass from a penalty.
Yeah.
It's only from a try.
And I think it's really unfair, actually, because a forward pass can put you in a situation where you become under a lot of stress, and then you give away a penalty.
Yeah, there do have to be limits to the intervention of TMOs and the technology, and it is one of those, invariably moments like that will happen, but on balance, I wouldn't want the TMO to be able to say, I think you might need to look at a forward pass.
Yeah, if he doesn't see it, he doesn't see it. But the other...
You've got a touch judge and a referee on the field.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Another angle of this is, are officiating teams letting things go because they think, oh, well, we'll catch it on review?
If it needs to be.
Yeah, we don't want to be the guys...
If it's material.
Yeah, we don't want to be the guys that prevent a try being scored because you called the forward pass wrong.
Which happened with Ben Whitehouse. I think something like that he called... I don't want to throw him under a bus now, but someone... There was a referee in a season or two ago who did exactly that, called it forward... Rather than just letting the player run through and score, it might be a Premiership game.
It's happened at least twice. It's happened a few times where exactly that has happened. The ref has blown up as someone's breaking away for what they thought was a knock on.
And they could have waited, let them put the ball down, and then reviewed it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or more common is the forward pass or knock on happens, and then they blow up for the other team to get the scrum, but the other team has got far more of an advantage in their throw. Look, it's going to happen.
On the decision at the death, having got that penalty and had the sustained pressure, Alex Donbrandt, when he put the ball down, did not look totally confident. When they cut to the Quinns coaches looking at the review, they didn't look particularly happy. The on-field decision was no try.
Yeah, that's where he messed up.
That's the interesting bit.
And that is the interesting bit, because it was actually the TMO who said that I can see a grounding. Now, that grounding that the TMO believe they could see wasn't obvious to me from the replays.
Grounding, was it before the line or on the line? That's the question. I'm not entirely certain you could definitively say, and therefore you arguably should have stuck with the on-field decision.
Yep.
So if it was try on field, it remains try. If it was no try on field, it probably there was not enough to overrule it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I'm... I mean, it just goes to show the referee team made a decision and they have to stick with it. There was quite a lot of people quite upset about it. But as Phil is always at pains to point out, before you start blaming referees for the result, Ben Botica dropped the ball over the line.
Yep.
Missed four or five kicks.
Yeah, the Botica ball, Ben Botica didn't have his best game.
All is forgiven for that Montpellier game the other year, though.
Yeah, exactly. I did think that when he dropped that ball over the line, which would have been a lovely try, there was an irony in it because of the performance. Yes.
Poetry in it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's exactly as you're about to say. If you leave it in the hands of the referee and the referee gets it wrong, that's your mistake.
Yeah. If there's one call on the 80th minute that changes the game, then that is your issue.
Yeah.
And Cast should be focused on the fact that they missed all those kicks, dropped the ball over the line. Should have won the game.
Yeah.
And the fact that this is... Well, they've not won a single game. 0 from 4.
That would have been only their second European Cup away win in a decade.
Wow.
Mm. Tell you what, they looked physical though, Cast. I love their number 14. Not the famous one. Not Nkosi or whatever his name is. The other one.
Yeah.
I thought he was really cool.
Yeah.
Looked rangy, powerful. Just looked, he's had a lot of attributes which I like.
Tough. They were really tough.
Oh, they were very good team.
And front peel on the line out.
Oh, how do you get that done was, twice?
That was good fun.
By gimmick line outs. Twice.
They'll be like bringing back the penalty wall.
Yeah, exactly. I was astonished what I was seeing. Astonished. Fully professional team getting done by... Well, actually, they called it the front peel. It wasn't a front peel. It was 1-2. Front peel is... Well, it doesn't matter. But it wasn't that. And then they do another novelty line-out and score again.
But I love them using the winger from the within the line-out as on that front loop.
Was it not the scrum off they used, no?
No, it was the winger. It was Nkosi. They used him.
Hmm. Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, anyway,
I think he might have been in the nine position and he just flew down the blind side.
Because the nine was, well, for the first one, nine was at the front of the lineup.
Yes.
Oh, do you want the second one?
Second one.
Yeah, second one was really, actually, you know, for gimmicks, that one was very nicely worked.
But maybe they've seen something that, well, Quinns might need to go and have a look at tightening up there.
Well, Quinns, I think they were in a lot of trouble here. The last 20 minutes in particular, I thought it was all going Cast's way. They looked very, very strong. I thought they were out-muscling Quinns. So for Quinns to come away with that victory, very impressive.
They made nine changes. We saw guys like Nick David.
About to say Nick David, he played brilliantly.
Yeah.
He looks like one hell of a pickup. Why he's not getting more game time?
He has been injured, but also...
No, he's not.
Also Tyrone Green.
He was injured at the start of the year, definitely. But yeah, Tyrone Green and... Caden Murley, Louis Leiner.
So I inquired about Nick David's...
Marchant playing on the wing.
...injury situation, because where is this kid? He was so good at Worcester. And apparently he is fit, just biding his time.
Mm.
Judging by... I mean, Quinns do really need another informed back. That's that's not going to be the missing piece of the jigsaw. he had a very, very solid game. He does all the Tyrone Greeny things, which is, you know, the nice running and distribution and all things. Well, sometimes nice distribution. But he does seem a little bit more fullbacky. He's got shades of Mike Brown reliability.
Rapid.
Yeah, he's
rapid.
He is
fast.
He's good. Yeah. He's really, really good.
Yeah, they've got some lovely options out in the back three.
While we're on Quinns, got an email here from Luke Bright, contactheadchasers@gmail.com. Hello, Phil, Tim and JB. Firstly, I want to thank you for your... I'm not
fine.
Reading out that stuff. Just wanted to point out a rumour I've heard about that the Adidas contract at Harlequins will not be renewed at the end of the season.
Ooh.
As a Quinns fan... It's been amazing to have Adidas create some fantastic stash for the club. Yeah, agreed.
Some lovely stash.
Their training kit is great as well. However, I have to admit, if the rumours are true, I'm ready to embrace another kit brand that can potentially stick to the club's famous quarters a little more traditionally. As you previously mentioned, Quinns have one of the most renowned club jerseys in the history of the game, while many of the rugby community struggle to understand why some of our biggest games away in Europe are spent in a sometimes vile third kit, which JB likes. That has no real link to the club's identity. Especially when they don't match our Maserati Prosecco and Negroni aperitif image.
That's true. It's true.
Thank you, Luke.
I still like that Quinns third kit. Who would you like? I mean, who's making good kits at the moment?
One that I do quite like, they do some good traditional ones. I think they're doing Bath now and Northampton, quite subtly and traditionally, is Macron. Yeah. I think
Bath, do they?
And Scotland.
Yeah, they've done Scotland for a while.
Because they used to...
In Edinburgh and Glasgow.
It's a bit of a running joke, Macron.
Yeah, they did.
Because all their kits used to fall to pieces.
I'm just looking at the jerseys here going, Cougar, they're not... Are they a thing still?
Not really.
You've got...
Kappa.
Samurai. Is that... You don't see Samurai very much anymore.
No, they used to be Exeter, didn't they?
Yeah.
Are they all still about? Because
They lower down the leagues, don't they?
I think they pitched to do Sale Sharks as well. In fact, they might do Sale Sharks. In fact, I think they
do sail sharks.
Samurai, yes, you're right.
Yeah. Canterbury, obviously, very good.
Adidas, they have made some fantastic kits.
Stade Francais Adidas kit over there.
That's gorgeous.
They make some good kits. They do make some good kits. You've got to say that of all of the kits on the wall at the moment, Canterbury are... They are still leaders in the clubhouse.
The two best jerseys in the lifespan of this podcast, club jerseys, are... Because, like, the Georgia, Canterbury maroon Georgia kit.
Beautiful.
Absolutely
awesome.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
The international kits, that was a great one. The Japan kit, Canterbury again.
Yeah.
For the World Cup 2015 was exceptional. But the two best club jerseys in the span of this podcast have been the Quinn's 150th anniversary one.
Lovely.
Yeah. Made by Adidas. And the Leicester Tigers kit, which was racing green with the red and white stripe across
the
middle.
Single stripe.
Which, that was Canterbury,
that
wasn't Canterbury.
That was Canterbury. So and there
the,
you go, Canterbury.
The Bath 150 year.
That's the one I love.
Not that one.
No.
So I've got one.
It might be that one. It might be that one, but that's the fans' version.
Yeah, so I've got one of the official match fit shirts that we got gifted by Canterbury.
That is a...
And it's lovely. I might wear it next week. It is a lovely shirt.
Yeah.
And that's Canterbury. Also,
that's Canterbury.
In terms of form, Canterbury, I've had some of the best kits.
Maybe the best kit in the world at the moment is the Argentina.
Nike. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I know. That's it. That's the best kit.
Everything.
Oh,
they've got
that
the,
is the best kit.
They've got the white and blue one, and they've done a dark blue one as well.
The dark blue one's beautiful.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning.
That is the best kit in rugby, full
cool.
stop.
Yeah,
their image. And that Jaguares Nike jersey was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you like the Royal Air Force one with the F-35 Lightning on it from last year?
That is cool.
It's very cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Got some good jerseys in here.
I feel I need more. I thought I had too many, and now I'm making them into sound panels. I don't think I have enough.
I've got a load. I'm probably just going to get rid of a few of them if you want some.
I chucked a few this way, didn't I? There's a few.
Yeah, yeah. You've
I've chucked
loads.
Even more this way.
Yeah, I might do a clear out this week.
So I had a clear out.
Yeah, I think I need another 50 to get this room full.
50. Yeah, I can contribute definitely.
Wonderful stuff.
Refereeing.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned the referee at the end of the. Quinn's game. Did you see Wayne Barnes' red card Tolu Latu in the Stade Francais Connacht game?
Is this a swearing one?
So yeah, this was his second yellow card.
Yeah.
So Tolu Latu needlessly, first yellow, flopping off his feet, chicken wings, hits, I can't remember who it was, hits one of the Connacht forwards in the ribs. So needless, no head contact. Stupid decision by Tolu Latu. It's a yellow card. He's only been on 10 minutes, maybe even less, back on the pitch, and he goes to try and steal Jackal the ball, goes off his feet, and Wayne Bond pings him, penalty, and he shouts something on the lines of, it's an effing joke. And then Wayne Bond is starting to warn him about, look, if you say that again, and he immediately says, it's an effing disgrace. And so Wayne Barnes just goes from warning him to getting his second yellow card out of his pocket and he's walking.
Yeah, I love that. Wayne Barnes gave him the benefit of the doubt. An Australian speaking French.
Well, so Wayne Barnes is then explaining to the captain, who's English speaking. It was off camera, so I'm not sure who it was, but let's say it's Lau Mappy, or it's one of the English speaking. It might have been Tyler Gray. And the English speaking Kiwi or Aussie, he's trying to defend Tolu Latu, saying he's speaking French. But Wayne Barnes speaks French.
Yeah, exactly.
And Wayne Barnes also speaks English, and he's just very clearly, in English, said twice, it's an effing joke, it's an effing disgrace.
Yeah, Wayne Barnes says, he told me it's an effing joke, and I thought he was speaking French. And then he said again, it's an effing joke.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, he's getting a yellow card. Unlucky.
Also, as Aaron has pointed out on an email to contact headchasers@gmail.com, 20 minutes into the match at Stad, their number 8 was on the ground, and the ref mic picked up Wayne Barnes saying, I think he took a blow to the nads.
Very nice Wayne Barnes impression.
The way you do a Wayne Barnes impression is just by saying the word shoulder, but as shoulder.
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 Very nice.
Yes. And also, we've had a bunch of emails on like the cool places that you've watched games of rugby, Six Nations matches, which we asked for last week. Friend of the pod, Joe Riley, for example. From if you want to hear about the school,
whoa! You're not allowed to say that,
huh?
You're not to say that because he doesn't go by that name on the pod.
Oh, never mind, Joe Riley.
Yeah, I think we've already outed him.
Yeah, outed him. Yeah, Joe Riley's podcast.
Right in the schoolies podcast, you can hear about the school upbringing of the three of us,
which
and
was
many
very,
and many other interesting people.
Very good fun to do with Joe.
On my 30th birthday, my girlfriend had arranged with my school. Brackets, I'm a teacher, to get me a Monday off so we could go on a long weekend to Rome. She'd also booked tickets for the Italy-England match. Well, yeah, I mean, that would have been... He wants to go to Rome just for Rome.
No, yeah.
She's understandably now my wife. The night before the big game, after the usual tourism, we found ourselves in the O'Brien's pub. Classic. With a bunch of Gloucester fans and Gareth Chilcott. I'd love to have beer. I'd love to have beers with Cooch. He was my... I actually wrote into... This is true. When I was a kid, I must have been about 8. I wrote into Jim will fix it.
Wow.
I dodged a bullet there.
Your life could have been very different.
Why do you reckon you didn't get picked up? Did you include the pick? I just didn't fancy you.
I sent in a letter saying, Jim will fix it. And my Jim will fix it request was to train with the Bath rugby team because my favourite player was Gareth Chilcott.
Amazing.
Nice. Yeah.
Someone twigged it was his birthday. So he rang in his 30th by talking on the big porcelain telephone and was assisted down the Spanish steps. That's a classic, perfect curtain raiser for Six Nations weekends.
Mm.
I can't wait till we can just travel around and go where we want without any faff.
One day.
Maybe one day. Not going to New Zealand anytime soon, though, are we?
No, we are not. No, thank God. So I might be going on tour, boys.
Going
on tour with... Bournemouth Rugby Club.
Where
exciting.
To Southampton.
With Matt and Dave.
Portugal, yeah. I'm giving them serious consideration.
Does everyone know where it is? Where the tour is?
No, they do know. It depends. I mean, if Bournemouth listen to this, they will know. But they've done it very sneakily. They've invited 32 special players. And then once they've signed up, they expand it. It's not just a free-for-all, from what I understand.
Nice.
So, yeah. It's weird, isn't it, that, you know, most people for a holiday would like to go on a holiday. I've decided to go with a rugby team that I don't know at all.
But you've got Matt and Dave to look after you.
Yeah.
What more could you want?
That sounds good. We also got... you'll like this one as well, and it will lead into the Exeter game. George Trevor Harris emailed contactedchasers@gmail.com a screen grab of Sidmouth Rugby Club's 15 for the weekend. Just gone. It was Sidmouth... versus Old Pats from Gloucester.
Now,
and the fly half was
Philip Dolman.
Correct.
Dollars.
Phil Dolman, who once played a game with me. Oh, they were against me, so yeah.
Dollars, who play. only a year and a half ago. Well, yeah, I mean, in the last year he's played with JB. That's the highlight of his career.
He said
only a year and a half ago he ran rings round Semi Randrandra.
Yeah, he said to me I was far more difficult to play against than Semi Randrandra because I don't make many mistakes. You see,
yeah, well, fewer. You knock on the ball less. Yeah,
I make fewer mistakes than Semi, therefore I was much more tricky opponent. So.
But Exeter. Oh, we've already talked about that. Got it handed to him a little bit.
Mm. Yeah,
yeah, you know, they really did.
It was physical. It was a weird game because it kind of swung. You had obviously Simmons scoring a hat trick, which Don Brandt and Simmons both scoring hat tricks 2 weeks before selection for
almost
England.
Almost like they're playing for something.
Yeah, there's a nice bit of healthy competition there, isn't there?
It really is.
Yeah, it swung because you have Simmons try, then 3 Montpellier tries, then 2 Exeter tries, and then it was in a proper arm wrestle. It was a bit free-flowing in the first half, and then an arm wrestle until that Codebus Reiner intercept.
Yeah.
Which, he almost did it a few minutes earlier than that, off the back of a scrum, almost got an intercept. And he's so dangerous, because he's so fast, and he reads the game so well. On those intercepts, he just...
He's rapid, isn't he?
Yeah.
Exeter, I have been worried about them. I know you two are not worried about them. They sort of do lots of things well at different times and compartmentalised. So at some points they look a little bit like the Harlem Globetrotters. At other points they look like Exeter of old. When they manage to stitch all of this together for 80 minutes, I think they are going to be a ferocious team again. And it feels like they're just on the verge. So those 3 tries, I just felt that they switched off. They switched off and then they got physically dominated. Then they can turn it on again through Hogg and Noel and Slade, and then they go to sleep again.
Do you know one? I think in terms of, I agree, their play is quite compartmentalised. They'll do bits well and bits not so well. One person who linked lots of things together and they haven't been able to fill that gap, Nick White.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's a good point, that, because he does play like a... Well, more like a Petit du Général. He's a ball-playing 9.
Yeah, I always thought Nick White was a signing too far for Exeter. I thought they got Maunder and Townsend at the time.
Obviously, and Maunder.
Maunder and Maunder, yeah.
2 Maunders now. And that he would take away from their playing time. turns out he was exactly the right man to come in.
Such a good player. Yeah, he's such a good player.
But like, they got rid of Chudley, didn't they, a few years ago? I think he was a very nice player for them.
He was. He's more of the straight up and down. You know exactly what you're going to get with Chudders. I think he's a really good player.
Yeah, I like him.
But he's not in the Nick White mould.
No.
He's not in the Danny Care mould.
No, Nick White would be a lovely little addition for them, though.
Mm.
A lovely little addition.
If you could afford him.
I bet he's not like that expensive. He's in Australia at the moment.
Mm, yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, Wallabies money is important, but I think he could probably still
get some of it.
Yeah, he played Wallabies when he was at Exeter. Everyone loves being at Exeter. The question is, how much does he love being in Australia? Maybe he's locked up in his house, because that's where all Australians are.
What other games were there to talk about? We had.
Let's talk about the Ulster game a little bit. Just touch on Ulster.
Because Ulster played for 60 minutes. They played brilliantly. But there's something I'm worried about, and I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago after maybe the first Northampton game, which is they're trying to be a bit Exeter. Certainly in the pool stage, they've tried to be a bit Exeter. They consistently turn down 3 points and kick for the corner. Mm. Now, that's kind of understandable in the pool stages because bonus points are actually important to get you to the top of the pool, albeit they got to the top of the pool or second in the pool, and fat lot of good that's done them. I just worry in games like this, and definitely in the knockout stages, kicking for the corner, if they continue that strategy, it'll bite them in the backside. Mm. And it almost bit them in the backside in this game because Clermont, in the first half, they didn't play particularly well, but they got penalties and they kicked sticks, and so they kept ticking the scoreboard over, whereas Ulster were only scoring tries, and Ulster were 20 points up, and conceded 3 late tries against a very dangerous Clermont team, and almost lost the game as a consequence of not always having the scoreboard ticking over. So it's just something that Ulster needs to keep an eye on. I'm having watched them all of this season, I'm fairly confident that it will be because of the pool system, because they've been gunning to get the most pool points, and they will switch that strategy for the knockouts. I just hope that they do that and don't. Whereas Exeter, a few years ago, they didn't switch that strategy. They had they will always kick for the corner, pretty much no matter what.
Mike, big week for Mike Lowry, who got picked in the Ireland squad. Another
Did
try.
Did he wear his hat?
No.
No.
Did he not? You reported into Nick Mullins why this might be.
I
think it's because his hair looks really nice at the moment. He's let it grow out a bit and it's curly.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's looking good. Yeah, but as we said last week, Mike Lowry, Balakoon and James Hume all making it into the Ireland squad, which is very good.
It
very
is
exciting
good.
For those three.
Let's just talk about Ireland for a second, actually. In more general terms. They've got a few Ulster players, but majority of their guys come from Leinster and Munster. Would you?
Majority Leinster. I think 16 players from Leinster, something like that.
Yeah. Have Leinster had a single hard game this season? that's not even a joke.
Yeah, they got beaten by Ulster.
Yeah.
So, other than inter-Irish games, have they?
A lot of them.
Other than inter-Irish games, they play Benetton twice a year. That's normally a fairly tough game.
Benetton, they've got. The general thing with the Irish teams is when they play the inter-Ireland stuff, I don't know if this is still the case, but usually player protection protocols kick in, so they'll have to rest certain guys, which is nuts, but we are where we are, fine. They then rest everyone, and they come screaming into the European competitions and they
destroy everyone.
It's brilliant. And that's fine. I have no problem with that whatsoever because leagues are built in different ways, and the whole point of the competition is to test which way is best. That's fine. I would be worried though if I was an Ireland fan, because this Leinster team are rolling people over without breaking a sweat. Meanwhile, you've got boys in the Premiership who are fighting tooth and nail every week. When they get into that England camp, and when they actually pull on the England jersey, they're going to be battle hardened.
Ireland looked all right in the autumn.
They look great in the autumn.
I think they're going to underperform. I think it'll be France. It'll be England, and then everyone else will be scrapping. I wouldn't be surprised if Ireland lose one to someone like Scotland, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if I
lost. Scotland are going
to
be...
I wouldn't be surprised if for any team to lose to Scotland.
Scotland are a good side. They've got a good squad.
Yeah, in fact, they're all pretty good.
Everyone's pretty good.
Except for Italy.
Italy are not very good. Wales are missing a load of players. A load of their experienced guys who've done it time and time again.
But that's good, I think, actually. I think for Wales, this is the time you want to just move away from...
I think it's good for them long term, but there's going to be some short term pain.
Ireland, I think, will be bottom half of the Six Nations.
I don't.
Put it on the whiteboard.
I don't actually.
Do you not?
I think Ireland were. They were probably the best performing team in the autumns. They beat New Zealand.
Who's got home games though? That's the big
that
question.
Is always key.
Who has to go where? Because England have got to go to France.
I'm a big believer that you need to come into a game of rugby with lots of rugby underneath your belt. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Leinster get to the knockouts undercooked because everything's been so easy for them in Europe and then go out early.
Well, the knockouts, so obviously a good chunk of their squad will be playing in the Six Nations a month. That finishes, what, 2-3 weeks before the knockouts start? So they will have that rugby in them.
Yes, there is that. Maybe they're going to use the internationals as a warm-up for the knockouts.
So Ireland... They've got three home fixtures, but their two away fixtures are against France and England. So that's a tougher, arguably it's a tougher variation for them, yeah.
Do you think every 5 years they should redraw all the fixtures?
Yeah.
Because maybe
even every year.
Yeah, just randomly draw them.
I'm sure there's some mathematician that could work out the best and fairest way to do it.
Yeah, because you need... Because teams have different strengths every year, so you need to almost rank them based on their World Rugby standings, which is the fairest way of ranking them, or even their performance in the preceding Six Nations, and then work out, make sure that you're not playing like this, you're not playing the top two ranked teams away in a year, which arguably Ireland are this year. They're playing the two hardest fixtures away, so you play the first ranked team of the five that you're going to play against,
but
home, then away.
You couldn't redraw it every year because if you went away 1 year, you've got to go home the next year. That's
redraw it at 2 years.
Yeah, two-year intervals.
Yeah.
Two-year intervals.
Yeah, it's 2 years would be perfect, actually.
Yeah.
That's spot on.
Mm. Why aren't we in charge of administration of rugby?
I mean, there are lots of reasons. we should be.
We definitely have some useful ideas occasionally.
Yeah. As you say, Tim, you should pick people for what they can do, not what they can't do.
Yes. I'm confident about Ireland this year. I think their game looked awesome.
More fool you.
In autumn. Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
There was a lot of big, strong boys on show this weekend, and Nick Montgomery. I think this suggestion is actually something that JB might have come up with as well. So this could be a case of great minds thinking alike. This is Moose from Stamford, who contacted chasers at gmail.com. While watching the European matches this weekend, I always like looking at the pack weights. But as we know, the weight stats seem to be wildly inaccurate.
The weighbridge.
Yeah.
So how about, as the teams come out to play, just as they run out the tunnel, the packs have to get weighed on a massive set of scales?
Yep, the weighbridge.
With the weight displayed on the stadium. Yes, you did say the weighbridge.
Yeah.
On the giant digital clock. We all love a big, strong boy.
And not only that, from what I can tell, rugby have not recently partnered up with their official scale partner.
Not yet.
I mean, it is a great opportunity for someone in heavy industry...
Massively,
yeah.
The INEOS, wouldn't you?
The INEOS weight scales. That's right. Or you know, some precision technology,
like a scrap metal dealer,
or a scrap metal dealer. I mean, there's so many people that could
provide. Yeah, I think that would be brilliant idea.
You could even do it before they run out. You look down the tunnel and you've got this menacing eight gnarly blokes stood together, looking at the camera, backlit, silhouetted. And on the weighbridge, and the number comes up, and then they run out.
They just line up, don't they? Two weighbridges, right? Which are underneath each half of the. Do you like the way the football teams line up before they come out?
Oh yeah.
And the pack always come out first. They stand on the weighbridge, and then you have this little cartoony number which comes up. Do you know when you hit the thing in the fairground? The number
or the punching arcade machine.
And also,
it's 900 kg.
You can have a prediction thing that's something else to bet on.
Yes, there's so many things.
Yeah,
and it's so cheap. This is an easy win for rugby. Of course, they won't do that because they're too busy with forcing. Well, doesn't matter.
Let's try stuff.
But they're too busy doing
other
things.
Hey, listen. As I say, Wednesday, February the 2nd. I'm not saying that will happen now, but if you get behind us and help us with this new venture, maybe things like weighbridges are things we can actually do.
Hey, if you're capable of providing a weighbridge for the 2nd, is it the 2nd of February?
Yeah.
Get in contact with me ASAP. I want a weighbridge.
You can get it to Chinner Rugby Club in Oxfordshire.
Yeah, simple as that. Can you do that? Yeah, yes or no? Of course you can. You can make that happen. There's thousands of you listening.
And anyone,
you must know
anyone
how to make
in
it
the vicinity of Chinner, by the way, in the Thames Valley or Oxfordshire or whatever, and you want to come to Chinner Rugby Club, watch a game of rugby on a Wednesday night, come hang out.
Perfect.
Come see us.
Right. Do you know what? I want to talk about some games which have happened this weekend, and are going to happen next weekend. I genuinely think if you want value for money, like true value for money, you want to go, and you're in Preston, you have to be in Preston, go watch Preston Blackburn next week.
Is it Lightfoot Lane, Preston's ground? Is that right?
I'm not sure. That does sound right.
But yeah, go to Preston.
Hoppers. Oh my word, that is going to be some of the best rugby that you can see. If you don't follow rugby, you won't know about these teams. They're both absolutely massive. Both right at the top of the table. I think they're second and fourth. It's going to be a very, very good game. Also, this week, Sedgley Park smashed some more. Can't remember who.
Sheffield Tigers.
Sheffield. I think they nilled them, actually.
Yeah, 49-0.
Broughton Park got a win against Penrith by 2 points at home for only their fourth win of the season, I might add. And who else won?
I can tell you one thing.
Preston won.
Because the Leicester game was cancelled.
Yeah.
I was in London on Friday night for the Quins game, and then I suddenly had nothing to do on the Saturday. My brother coaches at Richmond.
Oh, they won again, didn't they?
And I thought I could go to the Rag and watch a game. As it happened, I ended up just getting back home earlier, so I didn't. Now I wish I'd watched the game because Richmond beat Bedford Blues 22-19
for the second time this season
with the evergreen Mark Bright.
This is
40 years old or whatever. And
older
counting.
Than that. This is an astonishing. This is a genuinely astonishing story. Which nobody seems to have picked up on. Did the press cover him the other day?
I'm not sure.
I'm sure he might have made an appearance in maybe the Times or something.
Yeah.
Mark Bright has been one of the leading players, maybe in all of England, for the past 20 years.
Maybe because he came across, maybe not quite
he's
20 years.
He's is it, isn't he?
Yeah. But he's played England Sevens.
Yeah.
At age 35.
It's an astonishing story. And is he top try scorer in the league?
He's always right up there as one of the top try scorers.
And nobody took a chance on him to get him to the Premiership.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think probably genuinely people thought he was too old. I remember playing against Mark Bright when he was at Redruth about 8 or 9 years ago. And he was old then.
Yeah.
He was like mid-30s then.
I think he's got younger since though.
Yeah, he's definitely getting younger.
Yeah, I saw some pictures of him in his Richmond uniform, and he looks great.
He's 43.
Yeah.
Yes, I've got ages to go.
He's 43, and he's still tearing it up.
He's still top scorer.
It's not starting, is it? It's not. He's just good enough to start for Richmond. He is top
try scorer
in the league, and they've played two or three games fewer than other clubs, and he plays every week.
I know. We don't stop playing. If you stop playing, you'll never start again. Isn't that right, Phil?
I occasionally dust the boots off.
It's broadly speaking correct.
His middle name is Roy. I love it.
Roy. Mark Roy. Mark Roy, yeah. Right. Yeah, it's an absolutely astonishing story.
It is an amazing
long way that continue.
Someone cover that story. In fact, if we support us on Wednesday, February the 2nd, maybe Richmond can be our next stop. And we can
do a whole
Mark Bright thing.
Yeah, do we know anyone who can get access to Mark Bright?
Might have a couple of contacts. Yeah. I wish I'd gone to that game now.
Yeah, you should have.
That's annoying.
See, learn. You learn, Tim.
Yeah, when he played for England Sevens, it was 2014, so he was 36.
Wow.
But he only started playing for Redruth in 2006, according to his Wikipedia page, if this is correct. At which time he was 28 then, and played 5 years there. So by the time he got to London Scottish, he was already 33. By the time he started playing for London Scottish, and that was 11 years ago.
What's that film? Oh, I thought you asked what happened in the ADM Premiership this this weekend.
Jamie, what happened in the ADM Premiership? Phil, do you know?
I don't know, but I'm sure someone might
Jamie,
know.
What happened in the ADM
Someone with enormous feet unsheathed on this table.
Well, there's no camera on, so we're safe. Unbelievably, Widnes lost.
Did they?
Widnes lost to Liverpool St Helens.
No way.
Yeah, which means that Thisbe Tok H, well, we've been given a lifeline because we missed out on a bonus point last week.
Yeah.
Well, not a lifeline, some breathing space. I am amazed.
Got some floats.
So did you get a walkover this weekend?
Yeah, because Burnley pulled out the league.
Yeah. Oh,
so that's that. I tell you something else about rugby at the moment. There are certain teams in certain leagues that need to get relegated. And, of course, relegation promotion has been scrapped for the whole season, just so everyone can get back on the treadmill and get used to things. But the teams that are now back up and running properly, fully firing, are annihilating.
Certain teams who have not fully...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mentioned that game before, didn't I? Preston, Blackburn.
Yeah.
Those are two very, very good, very, very good sides. But at the bottom of that league, you can just see there are sides who are just... They're nowhere near the level that need to be. I think Nantwich got absolutely battered this week. Kirby Lonsdale have had a miserable season, considering what a good club the club that they are. There's about three or four of them at the bottom. You think it's not helping them.
They've got the same thing to look forward to.
Next year. I'm just looking at your third and fourth in your league. That if I lived in Liverpool, going to see Liverpool Collegiate versus Liverpool St Helens. That'd be cool.
Well, so Collegiate have always been a slightly smaller club. No disrespect to Collegiate, but they always have. Liverpool St Helens are a massive historic club,
yeah,
aren't they? So you've got you've got West Park St Helens, you've got Widnes.
Widnes just up the road.
Yeah. So, you know, there's an awful lot going on. I mean, ultimately, you'd say LSH are a club of a stature that should be mixing it with the likes of Colney and... You know, they're a true historic club.
Well, just while we're on this, we had an email from Freddie Rand who says, could you just give a shout out to Reading-based rugby club Shire Hall?
Can we? Yes, we can.
Yes, we absolutely can. They're looking for new players to join the team for the remainder of the season and beyond. They're a one-team team.
Like Albion?
Mm. Yeah.
Just like Albion.
And a social lot who love their rugby and everything else that comes with it. Sounds like a good bunch. They train one day a week on Tuesdays at the Berkshire County Sports Ground in Sonning. I actually know it well.
Sonning?
Yeah. It's
Sonning's a beautiful little town.
It's just...
It's a gorgeous little town, actually.
Just outside Reading, yeah. COVID has really impacted our team numbers, as it seems to have done with the entire country, but being sandwiched between Reading Rams, Reading Rugby Club and Reading Abbey, all within 5 miles, we struggle to stand out. So, yeah, if you... they sound like exactly the kind of club where if you've stopped playing and you're thinking, oh, Mark Bright's 43, maybe I've still got a couple of years in me.
No.
Get to Shire Hall.
Between Mark Bright and Tom Brady, they're responsible for more injured dads than...
So, what's going on with Brady?
Do you want me to check?
Yeah.
Come on, Brady.
It's over, isn't it?
NFL. Come on. 27-13, fourth quarter, Bucks have the ball. No. 12 minutes left. Don't write off Brady. Only a fool would do that. You're not a fool.
Gronk's not fit and he doesn't have his main wide receiver.
As if it matters. He'll make new ones.
What's the game later? Bills Chiefs. That'll be good.
Yeah, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in Brady winning.
I wanted it to be Brady v. Rogers.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Never mind. Right, if we're getting on to that, are we done?
I think we're all done. Next week's games?
Fixtures next week. Let me go. So we're back to Premiership, aren't we?
No, we didn't talk about the Sale game.
Oh, yeah, what do you want to say about Sale?
It's not good over there, is it? Did you see him play?
No.
I saw the... Who scored it? Aaron Reed try and the Curtis... Roebuck tries. The Reed try, which was the loose head prop.
Yeah.
They panned Ospreys. They knew they were going through. They panned an Ospreys team that didn't bring their big guns.
Bring anyone.
Yeah, well, exactly. So it's hard to judge Sale on that.
But there's things, you know, the pre-match.
It's been a tough week or so for Sale, full stop.
I think you can see the stress sort of coming through a bit. I really do. Like the pre-match interview, I thought Sanderson, for the first time ever, just seemed distracted. which is odd. He just didn't seem himself. And I guess when you're dealing with a situation of the magnitude that they are, it's going to be difficult to keep fully focused.
He may also be... I'm just thinking, getting myself, imagining I was interviewing him. I would interview him and I wouldn't ask about anything. I would only ask about match-related stuff.
That's all they did, to be fair.
Yeah, of course. But equally, I would imagine you walk in front of the camera thinking,
Here we go.
I wonder if there's going to be a banana skin.
He would give it. They used to give a heads up. Well, you don't have to, do you?
No, but yeah, but you would. Yeah. You would. But nevertheless, going out in front of a camera with the backdrop of certain things, you could imagine him being a little bit nervous, more nervous than he normally might be.
They are, you can tell they are desperate for Faf and Manu to come back. Yeah, they just really want those guys, as you would. Their details seem off to me. They don't seem to be playing good rugby. They have a lot of ideas about what they want to do and what they want to be. A, it requires a lot of effort. So if they're off their game by, say, 5%, their main strategy goes out the window. And then you look at things like the line-out and they overthrow it. And I think they're also struggling to get these young lads in and for them to fulfil their potential quite as much as we thought they were going to do. They thought that this is going to be like some sort of golden generation, and it's not. They're just not quite clicking yet. So Bevan Rod's obviously quite very good.
Easier to come into a team in a back line, for example, when you've got Manu and Faf and...
I tell you who is good, though.
Guys like that.
I tell you who's legitimately really, really good. And I hadn't noticed it until last couple of games. Everyone says Ewan Ashman's good. He's actually turning into one hell of a player at the moment. He is playing some outstanding rugby.
Was he the one who got told he could be 50-cap international?
50 caps for England, guaranteed. Yeah, guaranteed.
Well, he's one game, one try for Scotland.
You know,
and what a try it was in the corner.
Someone told me you'd guaranteed 50 caps for England. I would strike a deal, right? Pay me up front for 50. I'll play as many as you want.
Yeah, do you think anyone actually said guaranteed 50 caps for England?
Yeah, you can pay me up front in today's money.
Yeah.
And then if you're confident, you'll be reaping the rewards.
Because
if I get more than 50 caps, then it's, that money's yours.
You know what? Give it me in an annuity. I don't even want it in. I don't even want it like inflation proofed. It'd be great. So if you think I'm worth 50 caps, you're saying give up Scotland now. Give me my 50 cap money now. And I'll play as many games as you want.
50 caps. How old is he? He must be like early 20s. You go,
21, yeah.
Give it to me as effectively like an annual salary.
Perfect.
For the next 50 years.
Yeah.
One a year. And then like his 18 grand England money or whatever it is now with the
50 caps. 50 caps is best part of £1 million.
Yeah, so 18 grand match fee. Plus the state pension of what's that, like 12 grand. It's 30 grand salary for the rest of his life.
Yeah. It works well for him because obviously, the tax situation is cool because when he stops playing rugby, he'll then have more of his personal allowance to use. Brilliant.
Yeah.
There's sort of an element of income smoothing. England get a world-class hooker, according to them, by the way. Not according to him. According to them, they get a world-class hooker and they get to deprive Scotland of a world-class hooker. According to them. Win-win. You don't even have to pick him.
So why did he go to Scotland then?
I don't know. Well, they didn't come forward with the...
They didn't offer him £1 million.
They said he's a 100-cap hooker.
Yeah.
And he's got that money.
Yeah, we need to find out who his agent is and find out why they didn't ask for that deal.
Yeah, that's great. Fixtures.
Fixtures this weekend. Friday night. At the Rec, we've got Bath hosting Quins.
We might have to change just for the rest of the season. Maybe they'll have to change the name of put a W and at the start and a K at the end of the Rec.
It is a Rec at the moment.
Sorry, Bath Quins.
So England players won't be playing,
right?
But other internationals would be available. So. Like Hoggy, for example, may well be playing if Exeter decide to do so.
Okay.
And Bigger and Chris Harris. And
still think Quins will win.
So, yeah. And this...
It's going to be tough for Quins, though.
Quins missing some key guys.
Big, big players.
Yeah. Missing Dom Brandt fresh off his hat-trick. Missing Bath, Smith.
Bath could do that.
Missing Northmore. Missing Marchant.
Close.
Missing Marler.
Close, but Quins.
Yeah, give me Quins. Quins are in such a positive mood and Bath are in such a negative mood.
Still got Esther Hazen.
Yeah, They've still got Essien, they've still got Danny Hare, Tyrone Green, Louis Leiner.
Yeah.
They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Nick David. They'll be fine. Yeah.
Next one. You go to Queens as well, JB?
100%.
Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoffs. We have Irish host Chiefs.
No England players, but maybe. Give me Irish at home.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad shout.
Irish who are losing Albert Tuisui to Gloucester, but have been linked with Nathan Hughes.
Nathan Hughes, who played for Hartbury this week.
But and he's on loan for the rest of the season.
Yeah, with a few others. There was a few other...
Mitch Eadie and Ollie Robinson from Cardiff. That's a hell of a back row.
Ollie Robinson's just been lending...
And Diogo Bailey from Bath, young winger, was there as well, I think.
So Robinson's just been loaned out to Tigers. So he's gone from Tigers, then immediately out on loan to wherever he's gone.
Hartbury to get a game.
The thing is, London Scottish had Nathan Hughes on loan until about 5 minutes ago. So originally Nathan Hughes was due to line up against Hartbury, and then for some reason something happened. I don't know what happened.
But anyway, he's ended up at Hartbury for the rest of this season and potentially London Irish next season.
Or Bath apparently are interested in him as well.
Well.
Which would... I don't think I'd stop laughing for days. days and days of laughter would... see after that. I also think Bath are probably going to be keeping Jonathan Joseph and Anthony Watson.
And they might be getting Damien Diolande.
Really?
Johan Van Grant says he wants him.
Well, I mean, everyone wants him.
Yeah, you know. Who doesn't want him?
News.
But in an Esther Hayes and outside Marcus Smith kind of thing, and equally with Danny Kerr inside him, having Ben Spencer inside and Diolande outside Orlando Bailey, nice.
So, this to me is alarm bells sounding, okay? Because if you are a new coach coming into a squad, you should accept that job based on what the squad is you have. I think it's profoundly unhealthy when a coach says, I want to take XYZ player with me.
Taking players with you does...
You can't do that anymore.
Well, Toby Booth going to Bath.
What?
Took all those London Irish guys with him.
Yeah.
Come on, Jonathan Joseph. Come on, Anthony Watson. Come on.
That is true. But the reason that you could do that is because it was a very loose salary cap and no one's spending up to it. But now everyone is. So you can't just say, I want Diolande. This is bad recruiting policy. Particularly when, what are you going to do? Ship out Max Ojomo? What about Cam Redpath? What about, you know, the numerous other talented youngsters that they have there? Mm. So I just don't like it. I think it's a silly...
If you were going out Jonathan Joseph and in Damien Diolande,
that makes more sense.
That is like Max again. What could be better for Orlando Bailey and Max Ojomo to be either side of Damien Diolande?
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Yeah,
but Max Ojomo is
it gives the team an identity and a direction, and it would just be a in the Marcus Smith. With Andre Esterhazy, what a foil that man is.
How do they... So, say if they got rid of Ojomo.
They won't get rid of Ojomo.
Well,
not a chance.
So it's got to go.
That will not be it.
Well,
Jonathan Joseph will be one
of all the crazy things. Bath is one club that might do something that crazy. But even they're not that crazy.
Yeah.
There's no way they should get rid of Ojomo.
If they could get rid of Joseph, Watson, Cock and Asinga...
Falatau.
This would be a great start to their season. This would be a mega start to their off season.
You'd get rid of, I don't know, 25%, 30% of their salary cap would instantly free up for players that don't actually play.
Oh, imagine what they could do with that money.
Mm. Bring in Diolande.
Well, I'd instantly give pay rises to all those kids that have actually been good. I'd give a pay rise to...
De Glanville, Bailey.
Yeah.
Ojomo.
Bayliss, Will Muir. That's the first thing you do is you get at least some of that money and you lengthen the contract of all the good young lads. Get Orlando Bailey on a 7+1, something like that. Yeah, that's what they need to do. Do not waste it all on players that you bring in.
But a player like Diolande,
you can
build a whole back line around him.
I mean, if it's a player, sure, and you've lost a... Yeah, fine.
Yeah. You know. One of the good coaches...
And he can be the marquee as well.
He can.
One of the good coaches to bring a player with him is always Mike Ford. Employ Mike Ford.
get George.
Well, you get two players. Yeah. One's really good. One's not so good.
You could get a player coach now as well. You could get because Joe Ford is a player coach at Doncaster, is it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Stop there. Our disk space has run out, I think.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
When did it run out?
I don't know, but it seems to still be recording.
But that means you've got nowhere to... we'll keep recording and then we'll just hope we have somewhere to save it. Let's wrap it up anyway. Fixtures.
Fixtures. Last few fixtures.
We're good. Keep going.
Falcons, Gloucester.
Gloucester. Ooh.
Gloucester.
Gloucester.
Yeah, Gloucester away. Yeah, Gloucester. Yeah. Gloucester have been so impressive this season. Worcester against Northampton.
Northampton.
Worcester.
Yeah, yeah. Worcester lose nobody.
Yeah.
Have I dreamt this?
Northampton lose big courts.
Sorry, have I dreamt this? Or was Steve Diamond getting a promotion there?
What, to owner?
I've not heard anything.
I think he's about to become the DOR.
Solomon's out.
I think that is what's happening.
I've not read that.
Maybe
anyway.
I could dream that. That is quite possibly a thing I could dream.
You do often dream about Steve Diamond.
Well, let me come back to you if that's true. I'm not sure if it is. Maybe it is.
Well, maybe we'll have a development on that next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if it is true, we'll do what, half an hour?
Yeah.
At least.
Easily.
Yeah, half an hour.
Then on Sunday, 2-3 o'clock, we've got Sale hosting Leicester.
Ooh. Sale hosting Leicester?
Yeah.
Leicester.
Leicester will grind it out. No. Although George Ford might not be available for them.
No Genge, no Ford, potentially.
Yeah.
Burns. No Chessum.
Burns steps
in. Oh, God. Perry will be available for sale, though.
Tom Curry?
But Bevan Rudd won't. Tom Curry has been released.
Has he?
Yeah, to play for sale next week.
Next week?
Yep, according to Sanderson.
Really?
He also thinks that he's going to win the European Cup, which is, possible.
No Quirk, or he might get released. No Youngs, that makes Leicester stronger.
Oh, but Leicester they find ways to win. But
Leicester, give me Tigers. Grind it out by 3 points.
Yeah, Leicester's set piece, I think, is going to be too much for Sale's handle. Unless Sale's set piece improves drastically.
I'm going to say no George Ford, Sale sneak it.
George Ford or not?
First defeat of the season for Leicester. No, not first Tigers, defeat of the season. Second defeat.
When is this? Yeah. Is it Saturday? Second. Is it at home?
Sunday afternoon.
I'm going to go and watch this one.
3 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm gone. I'm there.
And then the other Sunday game is Wasps hosting Saracens, which...
Saracens,
big time.
Yes, agreed.
Well done, everyone.
Good job. Hopefully that saves and you get to hear this podcast. Right, Wednesday the 2nd of February, I'll remind you next week. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com, patreon.com/eggchasers to support us. He's at jbeardmore on Twitter. We're at Rugby Podcast. You can email contact eggchasers@gmail.com and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.